All right, we're back in Building 99 Research World. Chris, how are you doing? You've been on Channel 9 before.
Yeah.
When we were talking about Verve, the type-safe operating system. So please, people who don't know you, introduce yourself again, please.
So I'm Chris Hobletel, and I'm a researcher here at Microsoft Research. Mm-hmm. And so I've been doing stuff related to operating systems and programming languages, and I've been collaborating with Xuan Shen here on Type Assembly Language for several years.
Excellent.
That's right. Uh-huh.
So yeah. You are?
I'm Xuan Shen from the RISE group inside Microsoft Research. And I've been, as Chris said, I've been working on like compilers, program languages, and Type Assembly Language, of course.
Excellent. And great to see that you're on RISE. It's one of our favorite teams at Microsoft, the MSR. Yeah. So before we get into what it is, I mean, just to catch people up a little bit, you had in Verve, you actually are using typed assembly language rather heavily. That's why it's a verifiable operating system. So let's talk more about now, what is TAL? Let's start real quickly. Tell us.
Sure. Yeah. So typed assembly language, or in short, TAL, is simply assembly code with type annotations. Mm. So the goal of typed assembly language is to be able to verify the assembly code for safety and using those type annotations.
Mm.
So can I draw a picture?
Of course you can draw as many pictures as
sure.
you want.
Yeah. So in a very typical compilation scenario, often we have source languages, for example, like C# here. Is it big enough?
You might want to draw it a little bit bigger.
Sure.
And you might want to use black instead of whatever color that is.
Green. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So we have C# source code, and then we kind of like use CSC compiler to compile C# code to MSIL. And C#, of course, is typed, so we have the type information there. And then MSIL is also typed. So we translate C# types to MSIL types, and we can run a verifier to guarantee the safety of MSIL code.
Okay.
And then after that, oftentimes we use a compiler, say the Bartok compiler, and we generate x86 code. But the generated code is not typed. Mm. Therefore, we cannot type check x86 code just like we type check C# or MSIL. So for typed assembly language, we ask the compiler to preserve all the information to x86 level as well. Of course, the types here will be different from the types for MSIL or for C#. It's low level, corresponding to the x86 instruction.
Okay.
And then we can develop a verifier for x86 plus the type information to guarantee the same safety property, just like we guarantee C# safety and MSIL safety. So Chris, do you want to show an example of the type assembly language code?
So, let's see. If I draw it over here.
Sure, I'm going to lift this up because you're about 6'5 or something. And then, go for it.
Yeah, so it's what I can show here is like what you might start with at the C# level and what that might end up looking like once you compile it all the way down to x86 and have types in there.
Excellent.
If you imagine we had some class maybe it's got an integer field in it, F, and it's got some method, let's call it M, that takes an argument, which is also an integer, and it just returns, say, F plus X. So very simple. And at the assembly language level, this method might be implemented as... So we would expect, to have our this pointer come in, say, register ECX. We might expect X to come in and register EDX, Those are the two standard registers that things are passed in on x86.
Okay.
And then we could have some instructions that perform this arithmetic and return things. So the return value we'd expect to go out in EAX. So the first thing we might do is move maybe the contents of F into EAX. So we would get that by saying ECX plus wherever this field F is in this object. And so maybe the object has a method table pointer at the beginning, at offset 0, and then at offset 4 we'll find this field F. So the first thing we do is read that field F, put it in our register.
Okay.
And so now we've got this part, we have to add it to the argument so we can have an add instruction that adds EDX to EAX. And now we've got the results F plus X and EAX. That's the return value. So it's a very simple method to implement. I actually have to return. Each one of these registers actually has a type that we can define statically here. So for instance, X has the type integer in the C sharp code. We should expect the register EDX to have the type integer in the typed assembly language code. ECX is a this pointer. It's going to have the type of the class. So we can assign that type C here. And when we read this field F, that has type integer as well. So at this point, we can say EAX has type int. And after the addition, we also have the fact that EAX has type int. And so for each instruction here, we can check the inputs to the instruction, make sure they have the right types. We know what the types of the outputs are. Hmm. And we can verify that every one of these instructions actually is going to execute safely when we run it. Assuming that when we call this function, we put an object of type C in this register and an integer in that register.
Sure.
And so that's really what this verification process here is doing, mm-hmm. is scanning over this code, making sure the instructions match the types, and for anybody who calls this code, making sure that fill the argument registers with things of the proper type.
Interesting. You were saying, Gene, that in some sense they can't be the same types. The C sharp types, your classes that implement interfaces that are all, you know, whatever. That doesn't make sense down at the machine level. So can you talk a little bit? So this is for verifiability to ensure what is it really? Is my question.
Yeah, I mean, we can give you a quick example here of something that at the source level is very simple in type check, and at the type assembly language level, things get a little bit more complicated because there's more stuff going on.
Of course.
Yeah.
Do you want me to draw the... Okay.
Sure, yeah, go ahead with the example. So basically, we want the type system to represent some low-level details, for example, like what the stack layout is, which is not visible in the source program.
Okay.
Right? And also, for example, like the vtable, you know, the object layout, those are not available in the source program, but we need to represent those in the typed assembly language.
Mm.
So that's the main difference between the type system for x86 mm-hmm. and the type system for C#.
Sure.
Yeah, but we still keep some notion of the C# type system, for example, like class. We still keep them in the target language, in the x86 code.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Typed x86.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
That's typed x86. That's what we're doing.
Right on.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is an example of this. Okay.
Right. So, and I'm going to make this guy virtual here. So what I want to do is take this class C.
Okay.
And suppose that there's some subclass D of C.
Okay.
So it might add more fields to C. It might override this method M.
Okay.
I've written out here a statement that allocates Maybe it allocates a C object with a new C here. Maybe it allocates a D object, depending on some complex expression that I haven't written out here.
Okay.
So what actually gets put into this variable at runtime, we don't know statically. It could be a C, it could be a D. And when we invoke the M method, that might be dispatching to the M method declared in class C. It might be dispatching to the M method declared in class D. Mm-hmm. So in the actual assembly language code, so supposing that this object here is stored in register ECX, I'm not actually sure what to write here. Maybe it's a C, maybe it's a D.
Okay.
And when I go to do this method invocation, I actually have to read out the method table from, let's suppose that the method table is stored at offset 0 in the word. Now I have to ask, okay, what type does this method table have? Maybe it's a method table for C, maybe it's a method table for D. And these types are actually completely incompatible. you can't use one as the other. And then I would be able to call whatever the offset of method M is here in the method table. So now I've got a kind of dilemma here. I have to give static types to this, but I don't know exactly what types to give. Mm-hmm. So this doesn't arise in the source language in C#, because at this point you can just say, well, we'll give it type C, because D is a subtype of C, and that works out okay. It turns out not to work out for the method tables, but you don't see the method tables in C#. They only show up in assembly language after you've compiled it down to its individual instructions. So now we really have to give a type to this. And we rely on polymorphism, which shows up in C# generics, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, well, you know what? There's some type, let's call it alpha, and we'll have a method table for alpha here. And up here, there's some type, alpha. And we don't know what alpha is. We do know that alpha is either C or something that inherits from C.
Okay.
So we can actually get by writing down these type variables like you would have in generics, and knowing a little bit about what the type is, but not knowing exactly what the type is.
Okay.
So that's one example of something where the type system ends up being more intricate at the assembly language level than it does at the C# level. And it comes from having concepts at the assembly language level, like method tables, that don't exist at the C# level.
Interesting.
So that may be a more complicated example.
Yeah.
Sure.
Can I say one more thing about the example? So notice here that actually we have connection between the type of the object and also the type of the method table we just got from the object. So this connection actually is important to guarantee safety, because we don't want to fetch like a method from one object and call the method on another object, even if the two objects have the same static type.
Hmm.
So the type system guarantees, you know, we can call the virtual method safely.
Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. I mean, so in some sense, the mapping, can we talk a little bit more about that? I mean, that was a good example, a little brain teaser kind of, I mean. But in some sense, you have... we're going to use C# because that's the language of .NET and VB.NET, whatever produces MSIL. So you go from MSIL down to typed assembly language. What are some of the I mean, there's a lot of magic that's happening between us just saying that. So can we talk a little bit more about that process, about the compilation from an intermediate level language down to machine code, just to kind of, because not everyone watching this is going to be writing assembler and compilers and stuff. So I want to make sure we don't go too far down the rabbit hole first. So let's, the diagram explained it basically, but let's talk a little bit more about the verifier or the BarTalk compiler and what you've done to that to spit out type assembly language. Is that fair?
Yeah. Okay. I can have kind of like a high-level description, and Chris, please fill in whenever you see necessary. So basically, you know, compiler is often kind of like, you know, organized in kind of like different optimizations, different transformations. And it compiles, so for example, the BarTalk compiler compiles MCIL to x86 through, you know, different levels of intermediate representations, and then does lots of optimizations performing on those intermediate representations. So each kind of, each transformation lowers, you know, the code a little bit, and then therefore get to x86 in the end. And so what a typed assembly language compiler might need to do is to let each transformation preserve the type information. So all the intermediate representations will be typed, and therefore the type information is also lowered little bit by little bit, and then in the end it gets to the x86 type, level type information.
Okay.
And also we have to make sure the type system actually works with the optimizations. Therefore, you don't have kind of like an optimization that transforms like a typed code to kind of like some code. We can't give it the type information anymore. So that's the kind of the magic in the compiler.
And there's some interesting history there too. So the whole idea of typed assembly language, I mean, it was developed in the late 90s, and it came out of this proposal called proof-carrying code. And, you know, people had looked at, like, Java bytecode and verifiable IL and so on, and said, well, can we generalize this a little bit and make it apply not just to a particular bytecode language, but to low-level languages in general. And so George Nekula and Peter Lee published this paper on proof-carrying code, where they proposed you give us some x86 code or whatever assembly language code, and you'll attach some sort of a proof to it that, that the verifier can check and make sure it'll be safe. And the big question everybody had is, okay, what's this proof and how on earth do you generate it? And so the proposal for typed assembly language was not only a proposal for what the proof looked like, it looked like a bunch of type annotations, but also a proposal for how you generate it. So the very first paper by I guess Greg Morrison and Dave Walker and Neil Glue and Carl Crary, they put a little compiler in the paper. They said, here's our source language, it's got types, and we're going to write out every stage of the compiler for you and show how it preserves the types.
Interesting.
And there were actually several stages in that paper, going from high-level language to assembly language. So I think the question you have, question you ask of how a compiler generates this, this is really the heart of typed assembly language. It's designed to be generated by a compiler.
Absolutely. It must be. And then, like you were saying, several iterations of optimization.
That's right, yeah.
Now, so the source language, let's look at a different language besides, you know, something that produces MSIL or even intermediate stuff. Like, what about a native language like C or C++? You could justify those. You could change those compilers to go to spit out type assembly as well, assuming you're using C with types or C++ with classes, or you're using it in an object-oriented way is what I'm trying to spit out.
Right.
Right?
So you get out what you put in to some extent. If you put garbage types in, you get garbage types out.
Got it.
Yeah. We want to start from like a well-typed source program, and then get to kind of like well-typed x86. If the C program, C source program itself cannot be kind of like verified for safety, then probably the x86 code generated from that is not.
But that would be cool, though, to be able to write in a native language or one that isn't verifiable, and get verifiable x86. That would be magic.
Yeah,
right?
That would be magic.
So then you could download anything you wanted from the internet and run it on your system, assuming your system employed TAL verification.
Right. So I mean, people have actually kind of asked this question: What can you do if you don't have type safety at the beginning. And there are ways to get safety back, maybe not as clean a way as you would if you started with type safety, but you can put in additional runtime checks, for example. In C, when you access an array, there's no bounds check. It might go off and clobber some completely unrelated data structure.
Sure.
But you can put the bounds checks in there. It's a little different from the traditional C model. When you do a cast in C, it's not checked. But you could put casts in. So people have looked at taking C programs, maybe with a few modifications, putting in a lot of runtime checks, and then using that. So that's kind of modifications that you make at the front end at the C level. And if you had something like that, you could probably take it down to type assembly language. People have also looked at the other end of, like, well, what if the compiler's already run? It's generated assembly language from C. It never was safe. There was no hope of it being safe. Can we put in runtime checks in the assembly language? And you can do that too. So you can go through and say, well, every load and store operation, let's check that the addresses of the load and store are kind of sandboxed in this memory region where it's not going to overwrite critical data structures.
Sure. That's more kind of like a runtime technique, and here typed assembly language is a pure static technique. Basically, we do that ahead of execution. So we do the verification ahead of execution, just like MSIL verification.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a static technique.
So, so in other words, let's pretend like we have a system that has, you know, I'm using some future tool, you know, from some different planet, right? Just to stay away from reality. So I'm using a writing code in C#. I compile. What comes out ultimately is typed x86 in my, you know, executable. You don't verify when that actually runs, do you? Because that would require, so let's talk about that. So you have a verifier low in the kernel somewhere that's verifying this stuff. Again, in the system that you've created, Verve, that's what you're doing, right?
Right, yeah.
But in a non-Verve-like system, can you explain what you mean by runtime verification?
Yeah, basically, we kind of like, we statically verify the executable before we actually run it.
Yes, okay. I've done that in my compilation step to build the executable, right?
That's right, yeah.
So what this essentially is saying is, if I had a system that supported, if I could run TAL, like a take an executable, I could actually just go to a website and download the assembly language and run it.
Exactly.
And it would be safe.
That's
because
right.
It would be verifiable.
Yeah.
There would be no CLR, there would be no jitter, there would be no runtime, really. I mean, you're just assuming you're on x86 machine. That's very cool.
That's right, yeah.
That's very cool.
One of the benefits, yeah.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit, let's dig a little bit more into TAL. I mean, I think people understand that it's type assembly language, assembly with type annotations.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's you know, it's a little bit more going on here. At the system level, so at the machine level, the thing that actually does thing with x86, do these types interfere or confuse or... I mean,
You're talking about the hardware.
You got it. I'm talking about the hardware. So, because it's not going to be used to seeing EAX colon some strange looking thing.
Right.
So, how do you compensate for that?
I can draw this real quick.
Cool.
So here's what we do after we run the verifier on this code. We take all these types and remove. We erase them. That's it.
Okay.
So what we give to the underlying CPU is actually just the assembly language instructions.
Of course.
So
it's typed assembly language until it actually has to run.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah,
of course, makes sense because, yeah, the chips aren't going to be supporting type systems. Interesting, man. And so what that means, though, is what actually runs was verified before it ran, but there's no guarantee that it was actually executing is verified if somehow you're able to inject x86.
That better be the same code that keeps running, yeah.
Exactly.
But one of the nice things about verified code is it's kind of self-sustaining. One of the things that we verify is that it doesn't modify itself. We actually need a pretty strong verifier to guarantee that, because if you take any store instruction, or any instruction that does a store, like even a call instruction, you know, overwrites part of the stack, we need to make sure that whatever address it's storing to is not the code.
Sure.
So we need to make sure when you do a call instruction, the stack pointer is a valid stack pointer. It points into the stack. It doesn't point into the code segment. Mm-hmm. The type system has to be strong enough that it can guarantee its own sanctity.
Sure. And, I mean, interesting. I mean, and obviously we're not really talking about a full-fledged .NET application, right? I mean, for example, what I mean by that is there's things in C Sharp, that you guys can't really deal with, right? I mean, if I use a dynamic expression, or if I use lambda expressions, or if I use... Talk to me a little bit about the dynamicism that's very important for developers that actually write way up here.
Do you want to start with runtime casts?
Yes.
Sure, yeah. So we actually, we are able to verify using the same type system, part of the runtime system. For example, like dynamic cast... if you want to cast like an object to like another class or something, mm-hmm. and also we are able to, I think Chris, you are able to verify like some GC, right, garbage collector.
That's part of the verification.
Yeah, that's an important part of the runtime system, mm-hmm. and also we are able to verify the interface between the compiler with the generated code and the runtime system. So we try, very hard to actually, you know, to verify as much as we can at the moment.
So for something like code that's using mostly dynamic features, you may have static types that just say object everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you run the compiled code, whether it comes out of a statically oriented compiler like Bartok or a JIT, there's actually a lot of runtime checks that get inserted. So if you want to invoke a method M on this dynamically typed object, well, you have to actually cast it at runtime and make sure it has the right type and it has a method M. So that code is going to be present in the assembly language, whether it's typed or not. What the verification process has to do is to make sure that it is there and you didn't leave it out.
Okay.
So if we see something that just has type object, and there's no runtime check at all, and you're trying to use a field of it or invoke a method on it, that's a type error. Because we say object O, that doesn't have a field foo in it. But if we do see the runtime check there, you know, we'll see something that starts with a register that has type object, and then there's this cast operation that we can understand. And what comes out of the cast is evidence that, oh, this is actually of type C, not just of type object. It has a field of type F, so it's okay to go ahead and use it, and therefore it verifies statically.
Interesting.
So we can statically verify that the dynamic checks are present.
Exactly, yeah.
Interesting. So let's talk a little bit, what happens today in manage world is, as you've drawn there, you go from C#, and the target is MSIL, and then at runtime, or you can ngen, I guess, at runtime, the jitter is going to come along at your first run, and it's going to produce normal x86 code. Again, the target is x86. However, verification happened at the MSIL level in the jitter, right?
That's right.
And so the question I would ask is, to have a typed assembly after you've already gone from a verifiable intermediate level language, is it really necessary?
It's not necessary in theory, but I still think it would be a useful thing to do.
Okay.
Because one thing about tell is that you don't care where the typed assembly language came from. It may have come from a nice trusted compiler that has no bugs in it and will always generate correct code.
Okay.
Or maybe it came from a compiler that... provided by other people. Or maybe it's your own compiler, but it has a few bugs in it. And if an attacker knows about those bugs, maybe they can convince the compiler to take verifiable MSIL code and generate bad assembly language code. Mm. So this is a way to double check the verification that happened at a higher level. So that even if something went wrong in the compilation down to assembly language, you could still make sure that you have this kind of backstop at the assembly language level.
Sure.
And any vulnerabilities in the compiler are not going to be exploited by attackers.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean it's really interesting because it holds promise for like going from C sharp. Again, this isn't reality for people in the audience and Mary Jo Foley if she's watching this. So you could go from a strongly statically typed language right directly to, so instead of going to IL, you go to typed assembly language, and what do you get? You get verifiability and type safety and all the goodness that you'd expect. But you don't have to worry about a JIT. You know, it could have performance implications, not to mention, you know, IL is a questionable step if you're only using one language on the .NET runtime, right?
Yeah.
So people have talked about that for years. You know, why have IL if I'm not ever planning on interoperating with a different language in my own project?
Yeah, so but this gives you a lot of flexibility because now you really don't care where the assembly language came from as long as it's verifiable.
Excellent.
It still might be useful to go through IL because maybe you want to distribute something that's cross-platform. It'll run on x86, it'll run on ARM.
Yes.
It still might be a good way to distribute files and have people compile them down to the particular platform at the last possible second.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a requirement now. It's just an option.
Sure. Or they could just use a different tool up front that's cross-platform to begin with.
Yeah.
But let's... I'm only saying that because, whatever, I'm not going to say it right now. So, interesting. What other applications have you found for this? So we know that in Verve, which is, of course, a type-safe operating system that has a verifier in the kernel, and everything from the code that you write down to the execution has been verified, which is really interesting. What other things do you see with TEL?
So in theory, any kind of like any compiler for like a type-safe source language would be able to benefit from, you know, the typed assembly language technology at the moment.
So, interesting.
This also can be used as a debugging tool for compilers. So if you expect the code coming out to be type safe, you can check it and see if it is, on your test code that you run your compilers on. And if it ever turns out that it's not, that might be a bug in the compiler.
Mm.
And so even just without talking about having distributed code and untrusted code and so on, it can be a diagnostic aid.
Interesting. Is there any sort of correlation between building for example, in the case of Java and C Sharp and stuff like that, those languages were designed specifically for the runtime, for their virtual machine, right? They're the way to express how to get this virtual machine to do a bunch of work on your behalf and all the libraries that come along with it, etc., which is great stuff. In the case of this world, do you see there being like the evolution of maybe a new higher level language that's maybe more fine tuned to interoperate with or spit out type assembly language, as opposed to you guys having to do sort of rocket science up front? There's more of a correlation between the higher level semantics and the type assembly language that come out the other end. That question may not make any sense, but it's a question. So who wants to answer the crazy But you know, do you understand what I'm trying to say? Like, does this add any sort of... Does it go in the other direction as well as far as what this benefits?
You could potentially expose more features to the high-level language. I mean, so for example, maybe this is a controversial feature in high-level languages, but some of them have the ability to write inline assembly language code.
Yes.
It's always been a little bit messy for the compiler to figure out how does this inline assembly language code interoperate with the compiled code coming out of C or C++ or whatever. And it's really scary for a safe language like C#, because now you're throwing away all your safety guarantees just to put in these little bits of code here. Mm. So you could potentially expose lower level features, especially for people to be able to get performance by handwriting assembly language code where they really need it, and still be able to time check them.
Exactly.
And I think actually there has been a lot of work on, so there's this whole Cyclone project that came out partly out of the original TAL work, which was a language that was designed to be like C and look like C, but with a type system that had a lot of extra features in it.
Mm-hmm. To guarantee safety. Yeah.
So I think a lot of that was actually inspired by the features that were available at the type assembly language level and were kind of waiting to be exploited.
Sure.
Another scenario might be, for example, like if we want to do some kind of like low-level programming, like C-level programming, for like the runtime system, like the garbage collector. So currently, it's often done kind of like at an unsafe, using an unsafe programming language. If we can expose some of the, for example, typed assembly language feature to be kind of like type-safe, kind of like type-safe language for those runtime system. Mm. For example, like exposing a lot of those pointer arithmetic, those kind of things. Mm. I think that would be kind of like useful for that special scenario.
Yeah, sure.
Like writing garbage collectors, those kind of things.
Absolutely. But you'd hope that the people writing garbage collectors know how to manage memory. Because when you talk about unsafety, that unsafe versus safe, there's a sort of a kind of a sensitive spot there. I mean, it's better to say native versus managed, because if you want to write in C and C++, okay, yeah, you have to understand how machines work and move memory around and just the basic of computation, but and understand that there's no guaranteed safety on your behalf happening at that level. There's the machine, play with it. But you can build safety into those systems. So anyway, what are you going to say?
Oh, well, I was going to say, a lot of the things that we think of as inherently unsafe, like pointer arithmetic and so on, we can revisit those things.
Sure.
With some of the types that have shown up in typed assembly language. I mean, if you're using pointer arithmetic to iterate through the elements of an array, that actually should be typable. We should have a type that says, here's the base of the array, and here's how far into the array the pointer is. And if the type explains that, you can check statically that it's always going to be past the base and before the end, so it will always be safe to dereference.
Interesting.
That's the kind of thing we actually have to do at the typed assembly language level, but that you could make available in a higher level language if you wanted to give people the power to write verifiable but still high performance code.
I think that would be great. And you mentioned, like in D and C++, you have the ASM blocks that you write to write your inline assembly, which, depending upon what you're doing, can be very, very useful. Certainly would be nice if you could in one of those blocks declaratively say, I want this verified. And then the compiler goes, so you're writing type safe assembly. Good man or good woman. goes through it, verifies it, good. If you don't do that, it does what it normally does, which is just x86 right out, whatever, man. Or optimizations, etc. So this could be implemented in the C++ compiler. Did you hear that, Stefan T. Lavaway? He's not actually, he's an STL guy, and he's not a compiler person. But so that could be interesting, my point. Now, around here, where you guys are doing operating system research in addition to language stuff, what's the latest on Verve, man? What's the latest? Since the last we talked, do you have an update or anything that you've discovered that you want to share, that you can share?
So we've kind of been pushing in a couple different directions. Mm. And so one of these is, you know, to make it bigger, add more features and so on. So, and I'm not sure, actually, I don't remember how far we've gotten the last time we talked, but so Verve is still a very small system, but, you know, we can send network packets, we can send ARP and DHCP and actually process the reply. So
cool.
So it's kind of fun to see see things starting to become real in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
We had an intern, Gregory Malika, from Harvard last summer, who was working on actually a lot of it had to do with TAL and how do we really trust the TAL verifier. There could be a bug in that too.
Exactly.
And how do we trust the interaction between the TAL code and other verified code, like a verified garbage collection and so on.
Mm.
And so he was looking at trying to take the TAL code, the other verified code, and put these all together in a single system and verify it all at once.
Mm-hmm.
So this is pretty hard to do.
Yeah.
And we're not finished with it, but this is what we've been working on.
Excellent. Well, it's cool. I mean, and we'll link to the paper that was written on TAL from the gentleman you mentioned earlier that was once at Cornell and is now at Harvard, you're saying? The original paper on TAL.
Yes, I believe he's actually Gregory's advisor, right?
Yeah.
Nice. Very cool. So we don't do enough on Channel 9 at the assembler level. A level generally.
You're missing out on so much fun.
Well, it's interesting. Registers are really, at the end of the day, it all comes down to this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's right.
This is the last form of human readable instructions. After that,
it's all zero.
Whatever, man.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, are you working on a typed binary system? Just kidding.
Typed machine language.
Yeah, typed machine language. No, that would be a little strange. You could add different numbers in to represent types. That wouldn't make any sense either. You have to be zero and one.
You do have a binary format, though, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Right on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is very cool stuff. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. It's great to meet you. And you guys are doing great work. And just one more time over here for folks to see. See if you can figure this out, Mary Jo. Just kidding. Great to talk to you guys.
Nice to meet you.
Cheers.
Mm-hmm.